Morning. We embrace free market economics in this country with a sort of evangelical zeal. You know, we are falling in love with handsome teenage vampires, but the idea of socialized medicine and a single payer is really scary, according to Fox News and other right-wing media. There was an article by Bill Shao, who's an economist at Harvard, that came out, I think, close to two decades ago, which was intended to warn the former Soviet states, who were also embracing market economics, about the failures and imperfections of market economics in the health sector. So what I want to talk about today is the specific failures and distortions in pharmaceuticals. First, there's the magnitude of the investment required to start a drug company or create a drug. This is not like becoming the world's youngest billionaire by setting up Facebook in your dorm room at Harvard. Then there's the consolidation of the marketing strength amongst the existing players. Gareth already talked about how many corporations exceed the size of nation states. There's a lot of consolidation in the pharmaceutical sector. The patents and brand names basically provide a monopoly control, which is not free open market, to pharmaceutical companies. And some of the regulations that are designed to protect us actually also limit free trade. This is, if you think of vaccines as a particularly valuable public good, this is an example of consolidation in the vaccine market. This is about 10 years old now. And so what you have is half a dozen companies that dominate the entire world vaccine market, with just a tiny sliver there from India, which is growing, actually. Industry's financial incentives. This is a major part of the world economy. We want the world economy to work well. Most of you have your pension plans invested in the pharmaceutical industry, whether you know it or not. So we do want we do want the industry to work as an industry because we need the world economy to work. However, the incentives for the industry, given that it's there to make profits, are often in conflict with the incentives we would like to have for public health. We should also recognize that this market is very unusual. The U.S., these statistics are a little old, but even though this country is a tiny fragment of the world's population, it has been representing, with Canada, North America here, about 50% of the entire global drug market. This is beginning to change and has been for a few years. What the drug companies, especially in the US, are looking for are big blockbusters where they get brand name protection. I'm 62 and I've been saying for about 20 years, if the drug industry could figure out how to make a woman like me look 10 years younger, they would invest billions in that before they'd worry about saving babies in Africa. And you see this is the US drug market with just the big pharma players, that most of them are earning half of their income or more from this country because what we buy is the latest, greatest so-called brand names. Because of the fragmentation in the healthcare system in the US, particularly with the payers, what you see in this chart is how much more we're paying for the same drug than they're paying in other countries. Now, all the bar charts to your left are either Canada or the Western European countries who have a single payer, or they have at least a national system where the country negotiates and gets better prices. The drug industry refers to this as price fixing. I refer to the other part of the chart as price gouging. There's a lot of playing around with how we pay and how much we pay just in one drug, Lipitor there. And that happens with all the brand names, especially. Looking for most of the new innovation also happens with so-called Me Too drugs, because it's much more profitable to create a new product which is slightly different, so you get extension of the patent and you get extension of that monopoly power, than it is to develop something entirely new. So the appeal of extending a patent is very powerful. There's also, this is the cartoon, lengthier treatments and less cures, you know, treating people with chronic conditions. And I will say that ARVs is a big one, and that's why we've seen a lot of attention to HIV/AIDS. There's a lot of money being made in this now, not just by the big pharma, though. Another failure within this sector in terms of being free and open market where we can make informed decisions as consumers is the very skillful marketing strategies that are used to create asymmetrical information. We can't make decisions like we can about whether to pay to come to this conference or buy Starbucks coffee. This is from 100 years ago when you could market any kind of medicine like snake oil with no control. But we have similar problems today. These are examples of a couple of books that have come out in the last, 15 years, especially Marcia Angel's The Truth About the Drug Company. She was the editor of the New England Journal for a long time. And it's all about how even in the professional journals, the clinical trial data that we get is distorted for many reasons. It's who pays, who funds the research, what they decide to study, what aspects of the results of the research they actually present, how that's presented, how biased it can be, because the purpose is more to market a new brand name than to really inform people so that physicians are making informed choices. People talk a lot about how expensive it is to do R&D, which it is very expensive, but there's a lot more money spent on marketing, especially in this country, because it pays off. Physicians don't realize how influenced they are. This is a pie chart of physicians saying how much they think they're influenced by marketing from the drug companies versus how they think their colleagues are influenced. Clear, they think it's only the other guy. I like this little graphic. This is a junket where some thought leaders were invited off to do a trip to learn about a new drug. They're invited on the trip. You see their prescribing of the drug. The yellow line goes down. That's because they're on the trip. And these are all people that think they're not influenced. We have a lot of pharmaceutical marketing that's masquerading as information to help the physician. This is from Australia, which has good policies to control this. So physicians cannot make good decisions about what to prescribe. They are not given good, unbiased information. It's very hard for them to get it, and most of their information comes from the drug industry. So, of course, consumers are even less able because they can't judge the physicians nor the products. However, in this country, there are only two countries in the world where this is allowed. The direct-to-consumer advertising has had a tremendous influence. This data is also fairly old, but you can see that's when the laws changed and direct-to-consumer advertising was allowed. And how much was, I'm going to skip over this one. This is just showing how little is actually rational decision-making. What makes things tick? Marketing pull, bonuses at the retail level, non-rational demands from consumers. This is from this is just a sort of famous spaghetti diagram from Kenya, because pharmaceuticals are the hotspot for corruption in the health sector in developing countries. And all of this has been set up to avoid the corruption in the government, multiple donors with their own procurement systems, a lot of wastage, expense, and people with vested interests in keeping it this way. In developing countries, but now beginning in this country, we have an enormous problem with counterfeit drugs, and this is where the corruption happens, as opposed to just paying excess money nowadays. I listened to an expert on malaria talk in Ottawa last week, and he said that 50% of the drugs for malaria coming into Africa now are counterfeit or substandard, which is going against everything we're trying to do to eradicate malaria. Donations are also given by drug companies because they get tax write-offs. They often don't help. They're the biggest investors in politics in this country. The FDA is considered to be too much under the influence of the pharmaceutical industry. Most of its fees come from that now, so many would characterize the FDA as seeing the pharmaceutical industry as its client rather than consumers and being concerned about access and efficacy and safety. This is a right-wing think tank in Washington's characterization of the FDA versus the World Health Organization, which has done quite a bit to try and guide essential drug policy. You'll see the FDA is characterized as an impartial regulator at the bottom, whereas WHO is characterized as an advocate for its own pre-qualified drugs. So this is a summary of the main market imperfections in the pharmaceutical industry. Barriers to market entry, investment, patents, adherence to regulation, etc. Conflicting economic and public health incentives for research and development. Lack of neutrality in scientific information. Asymmetrical information between physicians and industry, asymmetrical information and a lack of price sensitivity, often if you do have healthcare coverage, as signals to consumers, the industry's role in influencing prescribing and consumer decisions where most of the information is controlled by them, commercial incentives and influences all through the supply chain, including corruption, incentives for fraud and corruption, and laws that lack any muscle. The last thing I want to say is the first time I did a presentation on market failures and imperfections in the pharmaceutical sector, I was asked to do it at a World Bank flagship course. And I got two long emails from the World Bank telling me they didn't allow industry bashing. And so I had to cool it. And I removed some charts and graphs, but I don't think it is helpful for us to do industry bashing. I think what we need to do is talk about what our governments, and I mean global government as well as the United States government, needs to do to invest in the areas where industry is not investing because there's no motivation for them to invest, and to create regulation that is enforced not just within the borders of this country but globally, because the entire system is global now, and we have a lot of counterfeits coming into this country now because people cannot afford to buy their drugs and they're buying them over the internet, and a lot of those drugs are counterfeit and substandard. So we're falling into the same kinds of problems that developing countries are falling into because of the high prices in this country. Thank you.